Lottie Betts leading off this eighth. Jonathan Loaisiga's first pitch is slammed out to deep left field. That ball is gone! Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with a three-homer game. Josh Donaldson, he swings and lines one down to first, caught by Guerrero to finish the ball game. It's a night that belongs to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on Broadway, and it's a night that finishes with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. handling the final out.
I'll tell you one thing. You better not step on Vladdy's hand. You want to win a baseball game? You avoid stepping on that man's hand at all costs. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Buggus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I think we just start there, which is simply, can either of you describe the feelings of going from the fear of watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr. bleed and have his hand stepped on to watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr. smoke three baseballs over the fence against the Yankees, a couple against Gerrit Cole, the $10 billion man, and then finish it with a little bit of a cherry on top, snag of a play at first, closing it out. Like, Blake, is that the definition? I now understand war. That's a war. That's a one war.
Yeah, yeah, and it won't go all the way there, but you talk about replacement. Like, who is doing that? Who is hitting any of those three home runs? Who is, like, so the R in
is that
war
a two is, war? Like, yeah, is that a two? I don't know. Is that a double
the
war?
The R in war is replacement. Now, yeah. Imagine Vladdy goes out with that finger thing and Zach Collins spends the rest of the game at first base. Yeah. That is, we just explained wins about right. replacement to you. Yeah. It was amazing. I was euphoric. Like you don't have a choice by the time the third home run comes around to do anything other than kind of cackle at how ridiculous yeah. he is. Gerrit Cole's tipping his hat and saying after mm-hmm. the game, did you watch that? Like, if you had a cap, you'd tip it too.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Incredible. That's a great quote. That's a really, really great quote. I think for me, the Vladdy feeling last night was two things. One, that you actually, you're excited that you're beating the Yankees, right? And you're Vladdy, and so you're just fired up about it. You're going, okay, baseball, it doesn't feel the same way where, like, your best player takes over, right? That's not what it is. It's over a large season that you end up with one guy who's had more of an impact. And even last year, it's like, when I think back about certain games where it felt like a guy stole you one, I think actually more about, like, Lourdes getting hot at the end of the year, remember, before the injury? Or, like, when Springer returned from injury and all of a sudden it really changed the dynamic of the lineup. Or Semien walking it off and how many clutch hits Semien had. That game felt like LeBron stuff. It felt like Kevin Durant stuff, where you just go, I'm taking over this game. Auston Matthews stuff, where you go, oh, okay, it doesn't matter. My teammates don't have it tonight. The other team is playing well. I don't care. I'm going to take over, and I'm going to dominate. And it's weird to feel that way watching a baseball game. And I felt this, like, level of appreciation of just how we get to watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for years to come. That when this guy showed up, and he played out of his first two seasons, essentially, we were wondering if this guy was going to be what we thought he is today. And watching him rake like that against Gerrit freaking Cole, where he just does it in that fashion, where it's, I'm a great player and I'm taking over a baseball game in my limited opportunities. I only get a few of these at-bats, and every single one of them I'm going to take the ball and I'm going to put it over the fence, placata, 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 three placatas. I couldn't help but just feel, oh my God, I can't believe we ever had fear of this guy. And how often do you see it where you have these prospects that are destined for greatness and they're actually hitting on it? And here's Toronto with Auston Matthews and Vladdy both doing it, potentially Bo doing it. And then maybe, you know, on the weekend we start the Scotty Barnes part of that story too. It's just, it's an incredible time to be a Toronto sports fan. And I think especially for a Blue Jays fan.
So, yeah, there are a few other
things.
Yeah,
I'm sometimes at a loss of words. Like, you just go on that tangent, and I'm like, I don't even know what else you add. Like, he's such a special guy. It's like the best privilege, honestly, to watch him night in and night out. And I feel like that was the sentiment on Twitter with everyone saying, we are so lucky that we get to see Vladdy do this, and we're fans of this team, and we get to watch this young stud do what he loves and do it with so much power and passion. It is really special. You know, this is the time to be a Toronto sports fan in all facets, but yeah, especially a Blue Jays fan.
And you're right, JD. We don't see dominance like this in baseball because everyone other than Shohei Ohtani only plays one side of the ball for the most part. And you can have a good defensive game, but you can't take over a game defensively. The ball's got to be hit to you. And a starter can take over a game sometimes, and maybe that's when you feel dominance. And we're going to talk about a certain dominant pitcher who got yanked in the middle of a perfect game a little later on. And then if you're, you know, you could have a bullpen dominate or something like that if you think back to the 2015 Royals. But the other thing is, if you're a hitter, not only are you not coming up all that much, a team could decide to just pitch around you. Like Barry Bonds dominated baseball games in that teams built their entire strategy around avoiding him. And a lot of that was, well, we'll just walk him infinite times. And Vlad's not there yet in terms of intentional walks.
Were you surprised they didn't do that to him, though, in the before the third home run? Because I understand Gerrit Cole pitching to him, even though it was a spot where you kind of go, why? Just don't do it. But were you surprised they pitched to him? Like he was so red hot. I did think that, okay, at some point, isn't this just a take-your-base situation?
It's possible, but he also has Teoscar. Well, I guess at that point it was Zach Collins sitting behind
him. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, or Bradley Zimmer, rather. I was a little surprised.
Honestly, Zach Collins and Bradley Zimmer are the same guy so far. Like, until one of them does a thing, like, they're just the same guy. Like, but anyway, sorry, continue.
No, it's a fair point. And, like, this is, you know, maybe it's a too early in the season kind of thing. Maybe it's a trust your pitchers kind of thing. Like, he had been, like, Loisiga had been pretty dominant. Mm-hmm. Over the start of the season and in general. I know Springer got that liner off of him the inning prior, but you trust your guy there maybe, and there's nobody out, so maybe you don't want to start an inning off that way. But I think we're headed there where you got to be very, very careful. Anyway, so all that's to say, it's difficult for a hitter to dominate a game like this. And yeah, it feels special, and you add in the finger element of it, and it feels even, you know, it's very don't poke the bear, to borrow the Raptors thing. It's remarkable. And the crazy thing is, I'm reading Arden Zwelling's piece yesterday on Yusei Kikuchi, and he gets into the catching situation a little bit, and within there, he drops a reminder that Alejandro Kirk is the second youngest Blue Jay, because Vlad is still the youngest player on this team.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ridiculous. He just turned 23, and he's the best hitter on the planet.
He just turned 23. He's the best hitter on the planet. He's the team's best player. He's making good on the whole, what was the Game of Thrones line, Prince that was promised thing. It's just, it really is. And I know that we're just kind of going in circles now, almost just talking like, oh, it's so great, it's so great, it's so great. It's not even a take. But yeah, the fact that he does get the finger stepped on, that it is scary, that it is in Yankee Stadium, that it is in front of their fans, and it is off of Gerrit Cole, that one actually does go down as a all-time you remember Vladdy game, right? Like, that's one where 15 years from now, when you think back about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you're going to remember that game against the Yankees early in April. And that's the kind of special he is, that an April game can be special, right? That an early season, non-home opener, middle of the Yankees series game is going to be something that you remember. Like, Blake, what I saw you posting something about like total bases yesterday, and I'm going like, oh right, what did he just do?
So yeah, he had three home runs and a double, so that's 14 total bases. There have
that's
only
pretty
been
good.
Two
14 total bases is good considering that the betting lines are usually one and a half bases. Yeah, no, yeah. 1.5 bases is plus
you,
money.
You didn't have the over 13.5 total bases in this one.
I wonder what that paid. That would have been nice.
So this was only the third time a visiting player has done this to the Yankees. You have to go back to 1945 for the last time, when Pat Seary had 15 total bases, and Carl Reynolds in 1930 had 14. Both of those guys required 6 plate appearances to do it also. Vlad also becomes the youngest player with multiple 3 home run games since integration. He becomes, I think, just the 12th opposing player to hit 3 home runs at Yankee Stadium in a game. Just any way you chop it up, there's so many ridiculous Vlad one big numbers we could do off of this. But yeah, the big one is the Yankees are the most historic team in baseball, and you got to go back to war times for the last time someone beat the Yankees up on their own turf like this.
He's changing the definition of war times.
Truly. War.
Yes, war. What is it good for? Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it's good for one war. He's good for one war in one game. Last thought on it is just simply, I think that because of the way Vladdy started his career, which was slow out of the gates, I have a little bit of a different anxiety level when it comes to him struggling. And it's such an early part of the season, and he has the one, obviously, like, exit velocity breaking home run. But outside of that, it was a slow start for Vladdy, right? It's a slow start for Vladdy, especially considering we were coming into a season where we're going, well, he's going to not only potentially win MVP, but now he's going to steal bases, and now, you know, he's going to rescue children from fires. Like, he's going to be he's going to do all these different things.
And in spring, he's back to hitting the ball on the ground a lot more, which was the issue early in his career, that the power wasn't there because the launch angle and all that stuff.
And honestly, it's absurd and it's rude to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but every time he grounds out to the left side, a little part of me goes, please no, please not like this again, right? Not again. And he started the season a little bit that way, like you said. And it's not that I never thought he was going to figure it out. It was more that the anxiety of just how long is this going to last before this gets adjusted. And I hope it doesn't become a story in the first month. And so just a game like that for it to be just kind of relief. Not that you don't need him to continue to be Vladdy, which maybe they need him even more now considering there's Danny Jansen and Teo on the shelf. But it was really a nice bit of relief as well to know that he went out and had a performance like that right at the gate. Okay, so let's move on to some of the other stuff. Less pleasant stuff. Teoscar Hernandez leaves the game with an oblique injury. Ailish, you said before we jumped on the show the team needs an oblique specialist now because it's him and Danny Jansen. Not great, because oblique is one of those like no-no words where you go, shh, don't say that, because it's just a lingering weird baseball injury that you really only hear about in baseball, right? Like, when's the last time you heard about oblique in the NHL? Or oblique in the NBA. Last I heard, DeJounte Murray wasn't missing games with oblique, right? It's baseball. It's a baseball injury. So he's going to be, I'm assuming, missing some games. He takes a weird swing. He clearly looks hurt. He steps off. Charlie Montoyo steps up to the top of the dugout. He doesn't pull him out. What did you just think about Charlie doing that and not pulling Teo? Because, yeah, Teo gave him the thumbs up, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've been an athlete where you're injured and you want to play through it. You're not going to want to pull yourself out of the game. I think that was an opportunity for Charlie to kind of override that and say, hey, you know, let's actually talk this out. You're one of the most important players on our team right now. We already downed somebody with a similar-looking grimace in a similar-looking situation. It really felt like an opportunity for him to come out just to make sure. And, you know, the next swing, you see, well, that was a mistake, right? He didn't look comfortable at all. He barely jogged it out there. And he goes straight out of the game into the locker room. It's tough to see.
Yankees thought it was the end of the inning because he moved so poorly. They were like, oh, it must be done.
We're done. No, really tough to see, especially with the opportunity that Charlie was standing there. He's thinking about it, like, what? Like, why would you not just take that opportunity to really go talk to the player? A lot of players are just eager to keep playing in the game, as we saw, and it bit them in the butt. So, tough to watch.
So, I know that he probably didn't make the injury any worse, but it was kind of a bad look for Charlie. Like, you got to just go out and give your guy a second. Like, I just, it's one of those where, okay, obviously.
There's only positive outcomes from that.
Right. People are going to overreact because they're going to go, like, Charlie should have gone out there. Well, the damage is already done. He's clearly already hurt. But yeah, you still have to go out. That's one of your best players. Charlie, I know as soon as you step up on that top step, that can't be a are you good situation. Like, it's baseball. It takes a million years to play a game. Go out there and just take the second to talk to your player and make sure he's okay. Bring the trainer out there and make sure he's okay. It's still sports. Like, these guys are tough. They don't want to just automatically be like, oh, I pulled something minor. I'm pulling myself from a game automatically. I just thought it was a bit of a poor showing from Charlie. I got to admit, I didn't like it. Now, boy, who steps in here? Tapia, Blake? Is we getting a lot of my guy
Your
Taps?
Your favorite guy.
Well, I just, can I, go ahead, Blake, he's the guy who steps in, right?
I wonder if Bradley Zimmer gets a look here too, because not just because Tapia hasn't been off to exactly the best start here, and yeah, it's only three games, so whatever, give it some time. But we saw what the defensive look would look like last night in the event of Teoscar being unavailable, and it's Zimmer in center with Springer moving to right field. Springer has spent a lot of time at right field in his career. He spent entire season there with Houston at one point when they had Jake Marisnick and Carlos Gomez in center field. So he's not a guy who can't play right field or isn't open to playing right field. We've talked about managing Springer's workload and stuff like that, and maybe a corner outfield spot, getting him, you know, as a small silver lining, if he plays the next 10, 15 games in right, maybe that's a nice way to limit his wear and tear. We haven't seen much of Tapia in center. Zimmer is unquestionably better defensively and has a little bit more pop in his bat. But, I mean, if you haven't enjoyed the Zach Collins or Raimel Tapia experience at the plate, I don't know that you're going to love the 33-35% strikeout rate on Bradley Zimmer. But, yeah, Zimmer and Tapia are now in some form everyday guys, with maybe even Biggio seeing some time in the corner outfield. He's played there before. They obviously, you know, he's a guy you trust a little bit more at this stage at the plate than Tapia or Zimmer. But yeah, I think, you know, Biggio is maybe the guy who his outlook changes the most in the short term there.
So one of the things going into this offseason that I think ended up getting just a little bit overlooked in the excitement of things, we've gone over this, but I really do think that the whole, not only the Jays being in on quote-unquote, or maybe they weren't in on it, but whatever, the excitement around the idea of, are they actually in Freddie Freeman? Is Freddie Freeman going to come to Toronto? Could they end up actually doing this? Oh my God, are they going to trade for Jose Ramirez? We got Carlos Baerga coming on and telling like 80%. So we're all sitting here kind of in Jose Ramirez watch. I think we had a little bit of overlooking of around the fringes of this roster. I don't think that we question certain things the same way, because I think we viewed it as, well, they've got one other move to make. Now that we're here, I got to tell you, it's early, but did they make the bench better? Is the bench better? Because that was one of the question marks going into the offseason, was how do you make this team a little bit deeper? And all of a sudden, they have two injuries, and they're pretty pivotal injuries. They're not good injuries. But I'm going, I understand that they traded for Zach Collins because Reese McGuire didn't have options. But the reason you trade Randall Grichuk was not because he wasn't a competent fourth outfielder. He had a profile that was a little similar to some of your other guys, which wasn't great. You didn't want to be overly right-handed. But the reason why you wanted to move Randall Grichuk was the money. And then if you don't add more money to that, it doesn't really make as much sense. It's early, but Randall Grichuk is unquestionably a better hitter than Ramil Tapia. It doesn't matter if you hit from the left side of the plate, if you don't hit at all from the left side of the plate. And watching that guy bobble that ball yesterday out and left, I went, are you kidding me? You can't make that type of a play? You know what Randall Grichuk could do? Play plus defense. If you put Randall Grichuk in a corner outfield spot, you have an unbelievable corner outfielder. Randall Grichuk is getting off to a Randall Grichuk start to a season. You know what that is? That's an OPS. That's in the middle sevens. 769 is what it is today. It'll probably end up somewhere around that number when the season comes to a close with plus defense. I'm not getting this trade right now. I like, it's like you traded for a pinch runner. Like, what exactly is this? This makes no sense to me if you're not taking the Grichuk money and applying it to more depth on the bench.
And one of the things that I said about that time, at the time of the trade, was, hey, maybe we won't see the return of this with the budget savings, because maybe that's something that, hey, it has a little more muscle if you wait until closer to the deadline, evaluate your needs, and then it's a prorated salary you're taking back, right? So $3 million or whatever it is gets you a $9 million player at the deadline or something. And it's not a cap league, so you can always just do your thing. I was fine with the Tapia trade under the idea that, yeah, that's a little extra financial wiggle room. You get a prospect for it, and Tapia is better suited for a bench role. And there were some rumblings that even though he played the good soldier and he was a very well-liked guy, that Grichuk maybe wasn't thrilled about.
Oh, there weren't some season rumblings. He told me straight up to my face.
Yeah, well, there you go. That maybe he wasn't going to be thrilled about that. So Tapia profiled as a better fourth outfielder type, but A, that's as your fourth outfielder, not your everyday guy, and B, you went out and got Bradley Zimmer, who is very, very redundant skill set wise. And in juggling the catcher situation, you also DFA Josh Palacios. And again, I don't want to keep coming back to Palacios like he's some amazing guy. He's just an org depth guy. But you now have a hole in the outfield if Teoscar is going to the IL. You don't have enough righties. You don't have three right-handed hitting outfielders anymore. And the guys you could call up are like, okay, Gosuke Kato, who has a little bit of versatility, but another lefty, another guy without a ton of pop in the bat, or Otto Lopez, who is a righty, but same kind of thing. He's right now, at least, he's just org depth. So I don't even know what you do if Teo hits the IL.
I mean, I thought Otto Lopez was a pitcher until just now, and so I think that's not a great sign of him being a prospect and what he could do for this team. I got to tell you, it just, you shouldn't be two injuries away from playing. What was Buddy's name yesterday? Or 2 days ago, sorry? The catcher who overthrew the
front. Tyler Heinemann.
Heinemann, that guy.
We've seen Tyler Heinemann, Zimmer, and now Tapia is an everyday player. And all of a sudden I'm going, well, thank goodness there's Kevin Biggio. Like, Kevin Biggio is a decent bench player. I don't mind him as a bench player. But he also was meant to already be in this lineup with some regularity. Now he's an everyday guy. I don't know how I feel about that. It's not exactly like he's a world breaker here. I'm looking at the Blue Jays bench depth right now, and it kind of looks crap. It looks like they didn't really build the team very well from a depth standpoint. Like, some of this is if Gurriel hits and Kirk hits that it normalizes just a bit more. But others of it is that the bench is Kevin Biggio, Ramil Tapia, Zach Collins, and Zimmer.
Bradley Zimmer, yeah.
That's not a good bench. That's not a World Series bench. That's a lacking bench. This is depth testing time. Like, this is actually not an it's early, but if these guys cost them a bunch of games right now, the front office is going to get hammered for those moves.
Good comment or text in from Jason in Toronto, which you can always text us at 590-590. Tell us your Jays thoughts. Are you feeling comfortable about seeing all these new guys in the lineup? Probably not. Jason Toronto, I feel like this could be Biggio's time to show something. He was already going to lose playing time to Espinal. His best asset has always been that he could play anywhere on the diamond. I hope he stays in the lineup and takes over and gets on in a real role now.
So, again, you should go to Blake's Instagram and watch his fast breakdown on Santiago Espinal. And it's basically the whole case that Blake is making is just about how it's like, hey, this might be sustainable how he's hitting. Hey, Blake, he better, because if they don't have Santiago Espinal sustaining this now, I don't know what the order looks like. Same goes for Kevin Biggio. You better show something right now, because all of a sudden your team needs you. Like, I don't think it's realistic to ask Vladdy Jr. to hit you 3 home runs and a double every night. So other guys are going to step up. And all of a sudden, it really does feel like the first 3 guys and then question marks, which is weird for a lineup that during opening day, when we're at the ballpark watching Ailish Crusher 45th beer, we're going, is this the deepest lineup in the history of baseball?
There are 2 things about how they built this bench depth that I think are going to warrant a little bit of examination from them. Not in terms of criticize them out of the gate, but hey, as you evaluate what you're going to do between now and the deadline and what you're going to do for next season and the season after that. The first is they built this bench out with the assumption that Alejandro Kirk was going to play a couple days a week at DH. They are optimistic that his defense has improved. They're going to catch him 3 out of every 5 games right now from the sounds of it.
Ooh.
And the question is not necessarily has his pitch framing and ability to block balls improved, because it has. It's more, can this body type hold up to catching 3-4 days a week? And sure, it's good that you find that out now versus later. But one of the issues with penciling a catcher in as your DH 3 times a week is that you don't have another DH, right? Your backup catcher's your DH.
Bingo.
So when you lose a Reese McGuire, suddenly you're 1 injury away from Jeff Mathis Jr. Like every team has infinite Jeff Mathis in the minor leagues.
I was going to say, that's a perfect guy to circle as the name of, then you get a Jeff Mathis Jr.
Yeah.
He's like a name that's sort of known. It's like when you see an actor who has the face that you know, that is in movies, but you don't actually know the name, but this is the opposite equivalent of that.
It's Margot Martindale. It's character actor Jeff Mathis. And the second thing is they built the bench in a way that, yes, if everything's optimized, like opening day, that bench looks okay, because they built a bench with guys who make sense filling in around the top guys, right? Like, you know your top 5 or top 6 are going to be the same pretty much every game. And let's call Chapman the 6th, even though he's hit 7th more often. You know your top 6 guys are going to be the same more or less every game. So, okay, what bench guys amplify that and fit in the gaps and work as platoon guys in the bottom 3 and things like that? But if you build a bench that way and you have injuries to those top 6, well, you've built bench guys who are supposed to be situational and 7, 8, 9 guys. Yep. And now suddenly you have a hole at the four spot, and you don't have a hole in the six spot with Alejandro Kirk, but suddenly he's catching every day, so you have a hole at DH. Yep. So that's one where they prioritized guys who fit around the core specifically versus just the best bench guys possible. And in the moment, it made a lot of sense. And then you see, oh, you lose two regulars, and it looks a little different. So we'll see. I'm not ready to throw out Tapia after three games. I'm actually kind of excited to see, hey, could Biggio – I mentioned it when Espinal started getting hot, is I actually love the idea of Kevin Biggio as a Ben Zobrist light, where you're playing some right field, some left field, some third base, some second base, some first base if Vlad gets a DH game or whatever. I actually love that for Biggio as like a 2022 outcome. I just don't love your hand being forced to put him in that role.
I guess with no one's writing off Tapia. It was a frustrating night, and I was certainly
absolutely
pissed, and I know you were pissed.
But he also has like a 5 or 6 year track record of not being a good hitter. So
that's what I was going to say. The guy played in Colorado and has a career OPS like around what, 700. Like his slugging percentage career is .393 in a place that's designed for baseballs going out of the ballpark. So
he's never had a league average season at the dish.
And there you go. So and he's not brand new. He's brand new to us, but he's been in Major League Baseball now 7 years. So to have 7 years, to have that track record of zero plus plate appearances, it's hard to envision, you know, a feeling of, wow, this is great. He's one of those dudes who, as you said when he first showed up here, can put some streaks together because he's a bat on ball guy and he can slap a few hits and get you a few singles, then a few steals. But to me, in this division, and now what they're going to be needing from him, which is playing with regularity, I don't really believe it's going to be very good. Again, a guy that was built for around the fringes. I don't like the bench. I didn't like the bench coming into this year, but it wasn't really a focus because the stars were the stars. But you're right. Like, they're going to have some weird DH days coming up here where they're going to either have the decision of, well, do we rest Springer and play him at DH and we give him some nights off and worsen our outfield defense, or do we play him out there and have DH days where Ramil Tapia is the DH? I still think that Mourinho's coming up now more than ever. Like, now the Mourinho thing is just, it's becoming unbearably clear that he is going to get fast-tracked. And then, frankly, he needs to get fast-tracked.
Yeah, we'll talk to Dan Shulman about that a little bit later, too. We've got Dan in the 9 o'clock hour. Loaded show today. Great job by our producer, Daniele. We got Jeff Merrick at 7 o'clock to talk OV Matthews tonight. We got Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer at 8. And then we've got Zach Lowe, Dartmouth's finest.
Woo, baby. You know it's going to be just straight Dartmouth talk.
We're actually not going to get his thoughts on the Raptors ahead of the series.
It's the first Dartmouth.
Why can't Dartmouth get out of the Ivy League? We need to examine that. We'll ask Dan Shulman about the Gabriel Moreno thing. And yeah, I mean, it's not an ideal scenario that we're box score watching. And last night I'm like, oh, shoot. The game got rained out. Like, I don't get to see what Gabriel Moreno did. The other thing with Tapia is, and I don't want to kick the guy while he's down at the plate, but when you get acquired and the idea is you are this kind of high-end bench piece or bench luxury because you hit left and you can play a couple outfield positions and you're speedy, you absolutely cannot have that play in left field where Barrios gets in trouble and you can't pick your pitcher up.
No.
Because Barrios cruised through three innings, got out of trouble himself in the fourth, and was obviously wearing it in the fifth with Rizzo and Judge going back-to-back. And if you're Raimel Tapia and that's your role, you got to make that play. I know mistakes happen, but you got to pick your pitcher up in that spot.
I actually think that that's such a bad play. That's like being a bad teammate. Like, you have to make that play, man. You absolutely have to make that play. And the fashion in which he blew it was just like, hard to watch is the way that I would put it. Hard to watch, not exactly something I liked. Last thought before we take the break and do the A-list. And again, you can keep the text coming and A-list. You'll keep an eye on the good ones. You can just rate him A-list at any time, whatever, if there's good. Really nice start for Jose Barrios. That was a tough spot, but if Tapia just does his job and makes a pretty routine play there, we're talking about Barrios as the number two thing today, not even Teoscar Hernandez in the injuries. Or maybe it's flipped, but either way, it was just, I said I really like bounce back performances, and that who doesn't believe that that guy's going to have a long track record of success this year, right? Like, no one was changing their expectations of him whatsoever. But to go into a place where he has struggled historically in Yankee Stadium and in a low-scoring game against Gerrit Cole, go pitch for pitch for him. That's actually that's Berríos is, to me anyways, best game as a Blue Jay, regardless of him having better numbers against other teams. Like, that was the most impressed I've been with Berríos since the trade.
Yeah, you pitched Gerrit Cole to a draw, basically.
Yeah.
Can't ask for much more than that from your ace, non-ace, or your number one, or your number two, whatever you want to call it. That's a guy who is in the Cy Young conversation every single year, and a guy who was runner-up for the Cy Young last year and is an absolute menace when he's on, and you play him to a draw.
Yep.
And if you're a starting pitcher and you play the other team's ace to a draw, you're just saying, hey, bats, win us the last couple innings, and that's what they did.
I couldn't help but think back, and again, very different situations, but I couldn't help but think about Robbie Ray going against Gerrit Cole and how you went, ugh, and it wasn't Robbie. That was Robbie's real one mark against him on the resume, was that last little bit against the Yankees. And Berríos doing that, I went, you know, man, if you can do that throughout the year where you pitch well against the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays, that's what's going to make you the ace of this staff. That's what's going to make you the guy that made that contract. So that's great.
Quick turnaround when you're a fan. And yesterday we were a little bit worried. I mean, it doesn't solve everything, but worried about the rotation and, oh, is Manoah the only guy? It helps settle you a lot just to see a good Berríos performance. And I was on the same perspective as you, hoping that there'd be the bounce back and maybe the home opener got the best of him. Certainly we saw what we had expected from him finally after one game, but it was a good reassuring feeling to be like, all right, so now we have two, and maybe we'll see Gausman also bring the stuff that we need, and we'll have three. So it's a good building momentum for Jays fans.
And the five-inning thing is a little less concerning when you see everyone doing it around baseball, capping their guys at eight pitches. And also when the Simber, Garcia, Romano bullpen trio is amazing. They looked great again last night.
Who Garcia was, because I'm so used to just calling him Jimmy, and all my texts are Jimmy, big spot for Jimmy, Jimbo.
Yeah.
And it's like, and when you said Garcia, I was like, no, it was Jimmy that came in, Blake. I almost corrected you because I haven't called him Garcia once. That's just Jimmy. He's just Jimmy in the chat. He's Jimbo. That's it.
I like the Jimbo.
Yeah, he's Jimbo. That's what he is. He's like, I love the guy already. It's amazing how quickly he acquired my trust. I love that guy.
With the Garcia last name too, it's Jaime Garcia is not too far behind us, so I got to be careful.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you know what? Please don't do that again. No, I believe in the power of a bounce back. I think it's one of the best things an athlete can do. Every athlete has bad outings. It's just going to happen, especially when you have long careers. It's what you do after the bad outings. Do you compound them or do you get past them? And so for Berríos to do that this early in the season, I think that's really great for him. Let's take a break. Keep the text coming. If you want to chat Jays with us today, you can fire away throughout the day. Again, loaded NBA day. Boy, I truly can't think of Zach Lowe, Kevin O'Connor is as literally as good as it gets for people to talk to about the Raptors series. So what a treat for you, listeners. Like, you're welcome. You're welcome. Hey, that's a little present from Daniele heading to the weekend. Baby Friday, he's got you.
Oh, Baby
Kiss.
Friday.
Yeah, well, like you gave it a little bit of an Italian spice there for Daniele. I like
that's
that.
Right. Yeah. That's for you, Dean.
I'll do the tease here. Is it a list or a list? Next. Ugh. Fan Warning Show, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy. JD, I almost did my name twice. Ailish Forfar.
Classic.
Sports at 5-9 of the Fan.
JD Bunkus Show.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 5-9 and it's Baby Friday. It's your favorite segment of the morning, the A-list. It's JD Blake and Ailish and JD again. Multiple JDs. The JD Bunkus Show featuring Blake Ailish. we need to settle a debate here before we get into the A-list. So, all right. We have this group chat between everyone in the show here, and JD yesterday typed in the following. Please put Baker in a list, please. That's how he typed it. And I responded, a list or a list. Didn't hear back from him. Didn't put Baker in the A list because I was not sure what he said and what he meant. Because Baker could have meant, hey, put him in a list to talk about tomorrow in the show rundown. Put him in a list to get him as a guest.
Okay, it now that's enough of the
it
you.
It can be vague enough.
Blake, who's the bad guy here? Because this is outrageous. I'm honestly, like, this is the most ever I've been upset on the show.
Who's the bad guy?
Who? A list? Who? A list of Baker? Oh, let's put him in a list. You do a segment called the A-List. I said, please put Baker in A-List.
No, because there was no dash in a list. That's how I read
no
it.
There's no dash? What are you talking about? This is outrageous. Obviously, I'm in A-List. And then even that you replied. First of all, I didn't see it. You're right. I didn't look at my
phone. You could have just said A-List, you dummy, and I would have been sorry.
But see, you just admitted. She just admitted it, Blake. She said, A-List, you dummy, and that now she knows,
well,
right?
Like, who's the bad guy here? You just left it, so how was I supposed to know? It's very vague.
I had my brother in town. He just showed up. I told you guys I was busy yesterday. I was going to be on my phone very much. You know I mute our group chat because it's just like Vic sends stuff in there, so obviously I'm not going to be reading everything that's in.
Anyway, Blake,
who's the bad guy? I got to say, if you give this to A-List, I'm going to quit the show.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot.
Ready to make my ruling?
No pressure.
A historic landmark case where I've decided you're both the bad guy.
No.
A-List is the primary bad guy here. A-List is the primary bad guy here, where obviously he meant A-List. Like, the show is the A-List.
Put it in a list. We're not making groceries.
This is how I know A-List is in the wrong here, is I thought she was just being sarcastic, making fun of, like, your poor texting.
So it was poor texting.
Not capitalizing it with a hyphen. Like, I thought she was, like
who texts and capitalizes with a hyphen?
A-List.
I am very grammatically correct.
I do every time I put it in the chat.
Exactly.
If you guys ever see me capitalize and put a hyphen in a text, someone has kidnapped me and they have my phone.
Every time that Blake types in the chat about the rundown, he correctly capitalizes A/list. And I know that that's when the A-List is, not a list.
So you're going to hold me to the writing stylings of Blake Murphy.
Yes. Okay. I desire more from this show.
Well, then I quit. I quit. Vic is fired and I quit.
Obviously, it was A-List.
See ya!
We all... 99.999% of people would have understood that he meant the A-List. JD, you get a sub bad guy here.
Yeah, just reply.
A, for not replying, and B, for demanding something be in the A-List, where you and I take it over.
I said,
take it over,
please,
on her all the
put
time.
Baker. Please, that's a demand. Please put Baker in A-List. Put a screenshot of the text up. Put a screenshot of the text up, and you tell me that anybody in their right mind would say, "Where's the hyphen?" Like, no, where's the hyphen? Pretty please. And now I don't even get Baker Mayfield, who, again, I'm going to railroad and is going to be my future quarterback.
You can have him at 7:30, so you get your own little section.
But also, so this is the other thing: is I'm unclear on what qualifies Baker for the A-List. Like, it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, about, back off.
Like, his quotes yesterday,
thing.
But I don't really know what. Like, he didn't rescue a kid with cancer from a fire. He didn't write a children's book.
He doesn't have a cereal coming out.
Those are the only two things that go. Yeah, he does have cereal. Those are the.
I like how A-List didn't realize what you were doing there. Was setting it up for a joke, and then she was like, "Yeah, it's my thing, Blake." Yeah, that's what you get.
Well, you did not make A-List or a list. But here's what did.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So we played the A-List or a list in with CeeLo Green, "Forget You," which is the clean version of, you know, it's a petty song, and I have a very petty story to kick off the A-List. So, a couple days ago, Ryan Hartman and Evander Kane got in a little bit of a scuffle. They were very unhappy with each other on the ice. And Ryan Hartman flipped him the bird, which is, I think, an ultimate, like, hilarious thing to do on the ice. And the worst, like, what do you do when someone gives you, like, a good middle finger? You're like, ah, yeah, you got me. So he does this. He gets an NHL player safety conversation. He gets fined $4,500, I believe, which is, you know, just pennies. But the hockey, $4,250. Sorry, let me be corrected. Hilarious. You know, I don't think there's ever been a moment like that in the NHL. But what happens next is the most exciting part of the story. NHL fans, especially Wild fans, rally behind Ryan Hartman and start Venmoing him, which, if you're not familiar with Venmo, is just sending money to him. 400 fans as of yesterday, 5 p.m., so even more, had publicly sent money to Ryan Hartman with captions such as, well worth it, thanks for doing the Lord's work, you're the biggest beauty in the league, bail money, 1% down payment, I'll send you more money if you do it again. Hilarious. If you went through Venmo, you could read them all. Very, very fun. But the best part of this, we know there's been some backstory between Evander Kane and his wife. She puts up on her Instagram story a screenshot that she sent $200 to Ryan Hartman. And that's kind of what kicked off this this train of money sending. And she captioned it, "Stay blessed." And she put it up on her Instagram story. Not petty at all, but that's where we're at as fans in the NHL.
People who send rich people money on Venmo, I have a sickness. And I know it's kind of funny. It's what, for charity, yes, right? Like, remember when Andy Dalton threw that touchdown pass and gets the Bills in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and Bills Mafia goes, "We're going to throw a ton of cash into this." Bills Mafia is incredible, Bills, with baby. That stuff. I know. That actually is one of the coolest things about Bills Mafia, is just the random donation campaigns that they end up doing. I forgot that they did the same thing for Josh Allen's grandmother when mm-hmm. they passed. I'm not talking about charitable stuff, but I'm talking about, like, actual Venmoing of this to people, or where they go, "We'll pay for that," or "We'll front the bill for that." It's like, yeah, Ryan Hartman's not the world's richest man, but he's richer than anybody who sent him the money. So just stop doing that, people. Like, send us the money. Send me the money. I'm broke. So is A-List. Actually, we're rich. We won the Wake and Rake yesterday, so we should say that we're swimming in it right now. I'll never understand people who do that. Like, the Venmo move of, like, trying to show solidarity with a celebrity is by giving them cash. It's this all-time weird thing. The wife doing that is incredibly petty, but it also makes me feel a little sad that she's that, you know, in that kind of a space where she's,
yeah, especially because that narrative had died down and we are,
yeah, you know, it's just
the
Evander
Kane,
you know,
story had kind of closed up and he's playing and let's move on, but definitely recircles all the things from the past. But $200 and the middle finger emoji can do
If you're Ryan Hartman, you got to take that money and immediately put it into charity, right? Like, you got to.
Yeah, I wonder what his comments will be. If he's going to just
imagine he just took it and he's like,
"Thanks, guys."
He's just there. He just buys something cool.
I'll see if I can get an updated amount of how much his fine was and how much they paid. So
buys a drone with it and he's like, "Yo, let's check out my new drone."
But what do you buy with $4,250?
That's what I'm saying.
My patio furniture.
I don't think you can afford your patio furniture.
I will tell you, quick update on the patio furniture. I found some. Great. Very excited. I ordered it. It's $60 to get delivered, which is totally fine. That's just to your apartment door, like to the lobby. It's another $60 for them to bring it up the elevator. I was like, I can do that myself.
Oh, my God.
Why would it be $120 for the difference?
I'm so happy.
The difference from the lobby into the elevator, which is 20 feet away, up to the 28th floor. Like, that should not be $60 extra. Hey. Like, I am not paying that.
Okay. I just got to tell you right now, this makes my heart so full of joy because this is the dumbest thing you've ever done in your
life.
What
do you mean?
It's not pay that $60. Oh, my God.
I'm
it's dumber than when you thought.
Forking up $60 for this man to just wheel it in the elevator.
You better have a plan. Like, I can't wait for it to show up, and then you're lugging it in, and you're scuffing
your
walls.
I got the Simps lined up to help carry it up and help bring it to the door. That's it.
Oh, okay. You better have it, because I'm just saying, $60 is just, it's one of those things that sounds worse than it actually is until you're scuffing your walls.
That's $120.
Yeah, but you're already 60.
I don't need no man. I'm
going to
lift it up myself. I'm working out. I'm going to be just hauling boxes.
You're absolutely toast.
Stay tuned.
Okay, good luck. Good luck with that.
Thank you. Here's a good one, a good heartwarming one. You're going to love it.
I hate it already.
Yes. Chloe Grimes, an 8-year-old Rays fan.
Oh, this is unfair now.
Yeah. Just mute, JD. This is a beautiful story. Chloe Grimes is an 8-year-old girl battling cancer. And she got a chance to throw out the first pitch to her favorite pitcher, Brett Phillips. It was a beautiful story. She gives him a bracelet after the pitch. He puts it on and wears it throughout the game. Next step is the Rays are interviewing the little 8-year-old girl, Chloe, and her family when Brett Phillips was at bat. He crushes a home run while she's being interviewed on the air. Man, it was just really, like, how does that, yeah, I don't know. Very special moment. He afterwards gets interviewed and says, Chloe, you're an inspiration. He's still wearing the bracelet. Gets you in the feels. Very, very cute, special story. Rally for Chloe. And, yeah, go Brett Phillips. Way to get that right at the perfect moment.
So this is obviously heartwarming. You see it. You watch it back. You see the interview of Brett Phillips after the game mm-hmm. and how touched he was to have connected with this little girl, Chloe. Poor kid, not only cancer, but she's a Rays fan. Brett Phillips is her favorite player. By the way, Brett Phillips is not a pitcher. He just pitches sometimes because the Rays, if they get down like 5 runs, will be like, well, we're not going to burn an arm. And Brett Phillips has the bat of a pitcher, so let's put him out there. So the most amazing part of this is that Brett Phillips hit a home run. I know he hit 13 last year, but he is not known
for... Of course you have the stats.
Yeah, he's not known for his... for his hitting prowess. But this was great. Brett Phillips is not even secretly, he's one of the most likable guys in baseball. He's very funny. He does the thing where he comes out and pitches in emergency situations and, very self-deprecating about it. He had one the other day where he gives up a pop-up and makes this amazing running catch and is like celebrating his own catch. And then, yes, obviously a lot of great work in and around the Tampa community. Shout out to Brett Phillips. Not a great hitter, by all accounts, a great dude.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story. We can fit.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I am okay. Just heartwarming. Okay, so one last one. Very strange. Just what we needed was another weird resort, but Sports Illustrated has created or is a concept of their own Sports Illustrated resort coming to Orlando in 2024. So I don't know why and who was asking for this, but very cool. It'll feature baseball diamond, go-kart track, water park, spa and wellness, and family-friendly water sports activities and more. So Sports Illustrated getting into the resort game. Not sure who it's targeting. It kind of sounds like everybody. I'm not sure if there'll be Sports Illustrated swimsuit models a part of this. That could be an interesting facet. Maybe it's kid-related. Maybe it's adult-related. I don't know. Would you guys stay there? Does it sound intriguing to you as a grown man?
Well, not if you're selling it that way. You're like, what could it be? I don't know.
Well, it's got family-friendly stuff, but it's got, the other things.
I'll tell you who this resort is for. It's for dads who want to be able to say they took their family on vacation, but are secretly holding on to some idea that they could have been really good at sports. And so those baseball diamonds are going to be nothing but try-hard dads where, some guy's going to be there and be like, well, I hit 80 on the radar gun when I was 19. And he's going to be in there brushing some other dad back, but he has no control.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, that's a dad's not letting go resort, if I've ever heard of one.
They're also going to get one in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. The Orlando one is 2024, and they might even add one in Hawaii. I'm getting right in the game here. So if you're looking for somewhere to take your family, your kids, also flex on everyone that you can rake. Also, you can play go-kart well. I don't know.
Play go-kart well. We're an F1 okay. show now. Right. You can't be saying play go-kart. Oh, they're playing cars.
I made one mistake.
I love when Lewis Hamilton plays cars.
Yeah, this sounds just like a scam to me, to be honest. And do you want to invest in my resort? We're making a Sports Illustrated resort in Punta Cana. I was like, nah.
It's literally season 2 of The Righteous Gemstones.
I was like,
festival type thing. Yeah.
I haven't gotten through that yet.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole thing, is Eric Andre wants the Righteous Gemstones family to invest in his, church resort.
Just spoiler alert, Blake.
Yeah.
No, it's like episode one. It sets up the whole season.
Spoiler alert, Blake. Not everybody gets to it as fast as you. So now I'm getting scammed and having my shows ruined. What a day. And what an A-list today.
What
was.
A-list.
What A-list what it
a-
was.
A-list. You can't say it that way. All right. Let's take a break. On the other side of the break, we got our buddy Jeff Merrick. We got a huge matchup between two of the best goal scorers of all time, possibly. So stay tuned. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.